Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
You can actually think of sales as an opportunity to listen, to bring your most creative self, to bring some of what you do best to the forefront in your first few minutes. And it's never really about sales anyway. It's really about, wow, that person just understood me. I mean, the truth is we want to go with the person who understands us and who can provide us with a solution.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. If you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with social media marketing expert Neil Schaefer and Jeffrey Madov of Madov Productions, then check them out, but only after you've listened to today's conversation, of course. Today, I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Linda M. Perry, a master mindset coach and business strategist. Linda's background is as a criminal defense attorney. She became a life coach and a copywriter. She believes that the key to a successful business is adopting a mindset-first attitude. Linda works with growth stage clients to show them how to strengthen and use their mindset to get ahead and find greater success. In our discussion today, Linda talked to me about how the stories we tell ourselves, stories that were often formed in our early childhood, are driving our decisions today, and how that might not be working for us. She explained how to change our mindset with regard to sales and price setting by focusing on being present in the moment and on service. And she pointed out that in order to create transformation, you must take action. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Linda M. Perry. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from the greater Denver area in the USA, Linda Perry, who's a recovering attorney, as she describes herself, also a master mindset coach and business strategist who believes that the key to a successful business is actually adopting a mindset-first attitude, which I'm really looking forward to exploring today. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Linda. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Justin Blackman, who was our guest on episode 274 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, introduced us and suggested that we have a conversation with you, Linda. So a big hello to Justin.
Yep. He's a great guy, great writer.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun talking about creating copy in your own voice, or in his case, in the voice of his clients.
Yeah, he was actually just reviewing an email of mine a few minutes ago.
Right. Yeah. Okay, now you spent 17 years actually as a federal criminal defense attorney, and then you've moved into life coaching. So why that change?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I never actually intended on being a trial attorney to start with. So I was somebody who thought I was going to go do policy work and really get down into the nitty gritty of the law and understand why laws were being made and how they really impacted people. And so what happened, though, is I ended up staying in Chicago. I was in Chicago from Chicago, living there at the time, and there really is no policy work there. And I ended up meeting a man who ended up being my business partner for 14 years. And he just threw this case at me. And I ended up becoming a criminal lawyer, and I was really good at it. And it never felt like it fit, though. It's as if you're wearing sort of a mask or an outfit or something that just doesn't seem to feel right. And what I loved so much about it is that my paper walked in the door before I did. So I was always really thinking about the art of persuasion. I was always thinking about how do you approach something and convince people of your position. So those are the pieces that I loved, but I had really gotten tired of sitting in prisons around the country, quite frankly. And it was a frustrating system to be in sometimes, particularly on the federal side, where they have such a high win rate here in the United States. There was sometimes very little that you could do in terms of storytelling or helping your clients truly be heard. So for me, at some point, I had gotten tired, and I had read the work of Debbie Ford. She was a best-selling author. She had worked with Deepak Chopra, and some of her work really helped me see how I was getting in my own way in my life, in my career, why I was staying in a job for 17 years. I mean, I'd stayed in this one firm for 14 years and went on my own and thought, oh, maybe it's actually just that I hated the firm. Turns out it was the law. Mm. And Debbie's work really called to me, and I started to see changes in myself. So at the time, Debbie had the Ford Institute, and she was training life coaches. And I looked at my husband. I had just been newly remarried. It was my second marriage. And I looked at him. I said, I think I kind of want to do this. And he said, why not? And I dove in, and I chose Debbie's work because it was something that had impacted my life. So I spent a good year getting one certification, and then the following year, a second certification through her. So that's how I ended up trying to be a coach.
Yeah. And did you have a feeling immediately that this is actually what I want? This is for me?
No, it's really interesting. What I struggled with at first was, when you're a lawyer, you're really direct. You know, I'm somebody who tells it like it is. And I think I struggled the most with, how am I fitting into this piece? How does Linda herself work as a coach that feels authentic? And to be quite honest, at first it didn't. And what I started to do too is see how most life coaches actually struggle. Most of them fail. They don't know how to build a business because most coaching programs don't teach that. And so I started to study everything I could about the researcher out of me from being a lawyer, and soon started marketing myself. And that started to help me grow. That started to help me really dive into an audience. And what happened in the process is I started to fall in love with copywriting and marketing. And so I ended up for a sort of a fork in the road saying, am I doing copywriting? Am I doing coaching? And what had happened was, I was part of a think tank, and they had brought people in to talk about self-care. They had had people come in and talk about mindset. And what happened is I looked at the head of the think tank and I said, this isn't going to change anyone's life. This isn't going to help. And they said, well, Linda, why don't you come and do a session with us? And for the first time, I did it my way. The first time I allowed lawyer Linda, as we like to call her, to come into the room and just find my happy balance. And that the ability to see so many people light up and have shifts in 1 hour in this room where it helped them break through on their business really brought me back to why I had wanted to do the mindset work. And I call it mindset work. It can be mindset work or life coaching. It brought me back into why this is so important, and it is a necessary piece of success. And so I think it was at that point, and that probably was a few years ago, because I had been doing a lot of copy probably for several years as well. So I think that was a few years ago now.
Okay. And when you did that first session, was that kind of a planned out session? Did you know how you were going to run that session, or did it kind of evolve and suddenly you thought, wow, this is resonating, this is hitting the mark with the audience, and this is what I should be doing?
you know, the great thing is I'd already coached for years and had done group work. And the coaching I have has a really solid structure and framework anyway, at least the original coaching. I've changed the model a bit over time. But it had a structure. So I took one of the sessions that I knew would be really important. And, you know, I love speaking because as a lawyer, you learn to speak all around the country and you don't get scared. And so for me, it was really, I actually pulled together a presentation. But what I think surprised me so much was that people were so willing to go deep, that people were so willing to explore themselves. And in certain industries, and I think particularly with copywriters or creative entrepreneurs, there is a lot of isolation and we work, you know, on our own. We marketers or a lot of people work from home. We've mastered this before COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
That I think it was something in that room where they were just, they no longer felt alone. And that, when I saw that piece, I just said, this is it. This is, you know, if I'm going to pick the two, and yes, I dabble still a little in some copy, but if I was going to pick the two, this felt like it had more meaning for me.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about mindset. So how does mindset play out in any business? Or, I mean, obviously it's not just business, it's across your whole life, but in particular, how does it play out in business? And what was that connection that you found there?
It really covers every aspect of business. One of the things, as I mentioned earlier, is that I, you know, even as a lawyer, I stayed in a job for 14 years because I was afraid that somebody was going to find out that I wasn't really this rock star, that I was some fraud, right? And I think people can probably relate to this, is that when you run a business, when you are an entrepreneur, that imposter complex that we all feel shows up at every stage, right? That's one way that mindset is impacting your business. If you feel as if someone's going to discover that you're really terrible or that you're stupid or you're not good at something, you're going to hold back. You're not going to be, you know, in your words, as innovative as you need to be in your business, right? So for me, mindset is in every stage of growth, right? It's not just for the beginner. It's not in the growth mindset alone. It's not, you know, it surprises people that actually, I had this client tell me this the other day, that as you're climbing up in your business, where you're reaching that intentional business level, the mindset stuff actually gets harder. And so it is always a constant challenge to remind yourself that the stories you're telling yourself aren't real, right? We worry about imposter complex. Mindset comes into play in pricing. This is my favorite place, right? It comes into place in sales. It comes into play visibility. It comes into play with money, right? You know, how do you hold on to your money? It comes into play with your vision. So if you're not approaching your business considering where your mindset is, the likelihood is you're going to fall into a trap quickly, and your business will either suffer from some of those, I feel stuck, I feel lost, I can't seem to move, I have writer's block. All of those aspects start to put a halt on your growth. And so you cap out at some point. So that place, that little quadrant of having the most intentional business, the one that you're thriving, the one that you're picking your clients, doesn't happen. So for me, mindset first, which is what we started out, you started out the show talking about, mindset first is an approach to business that I think is incredibly important. It is tackle the noise so you can hear the real signals, so you know where you're going first. It comes before your skills. It comes before everything else. Because, you know, I've been in groups that people have that, I have to take one more class. I have to take one more course.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So mindset first allows you to check in with yourself, understand your fears, how to deal with fear. I have a really great conversation around fear that helps people. how to bust your own beliefs, how to stop telling yourself stories so that you can actually tune in, become more creative, become more innovative in your business, become more strategic. So that's kind of how I approach what I do with clients, so that they're always getting to that next level, so that they're always able to move past whatever they're telling themselves.
Hmm. Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack there, and we'll get on to some of those things in a moment. What occurred to me as you were telling me that, I mean, going back to when you were in your legal career and unhappy, we all tell ourselves these messages, right? I'm not good enough. I wonder if I'm going to be good enough in this conversation to bring out the best of my guest. That story is going on in my head all the time. So I'm wondering, in your example of the legal situation, and you were very successful by your own admission, and you recognize that, and yet in your head you were telling yourself a story that, what if somebody finds out I'm actually not this good? And so is that a mindset thing that actually drives people to say, I've got to prove that story wrong, so they keep going in that situation that they're actually unhappy with, but there's something unconscious going on saying, I've got to prove this story wrong?
Yeah, that happens all the time. You know, I have to prove not just the story wrong. You know, in my case, it was also, you know, I had parents who had helped me invest in this get becoming a lawyer, right? So you don't just abandon that either, right? And it is that I have to prove to them that I'm also good enough to have had them invest in me in this way. So you stick with it. You show that you're just collecting gold stars, right? That's really what you're doing. And it doesn't ever change how you feel inside, because you may go. I mean, I used to remember going in front of a judge, having to be tough and pretend everything was great, that I had this nailed, and go home and be exhausted because and analyze everything that I did, wondering how could I fix this? And it's a never ending cycle. And it's also that same cycle which makes people work so hard, right? I have to work even harder to be better at this. I have to work that I'm good enough. I have to study that one more thing. It can be an incredibly exhausting, draining mindset. Is that not good enough piece, by the way, is one of the biggest things that I think most people struggle with.
Well, let's explore the mindset then a little bit more, and start off from the point of view of visibility. I mean, this is one of the things, you know, we help our clients be more visible and build their professional credibility by getting out into the world through the internet or otherwise. And often I hear people say, well, that's not me. I don't like to go out talk. I'm shy. Whatever it is, you know, there's lots of objections that they might have. And yet at the same time, they recognize, hey, unless we do this, we're unlikely to get more business because people won't actually get to know us. So what are some of the things that you would suggest to dig into and explore further in terms of understanding that story and then, I don't know, setting aside that story, overcoming those objections?
Yeah, that's such a big one. Visibility is hard for a lot of people. I do start out by saying, you know, I love speaking. When I first started out speaking, I had to take beta blockers. I mean, I would walk into court having to take beta blockers because I was so scared of being visible, of screwing up, of something. There's a couple of things that I suggest for people, though, and I, over time, obviously got over it. I don't suggest the fake it till you make it process because it doesn't work. Because what's happening is you're never allowing yourself to be present in the moment and of service. So one of the things that I know you talk about is you like service-based or people who are really being of service. And so for me, I like for people to think about it a couple of different ways. First, take yourself out of the equation. When it comes to visibility, the truth is you're out there to be of service. You have a product, you have a service that you are trying to share with the world that's going to improve lives. And the more visible you can be about the product or service, the better it is. So I have people also always remember, this isn't about you. Take yourself out of the equation. And the second they do that, they feel a little more relaxed. But here's what's behind it. What's behind the fear around visibility is usually a limiting belief. Oh, that's not me. Oh, I can't do that. Oh, I've never been good at this, right? That was my brother that was good at that. So these are stories that we created usually before the age of 10. So a lot of the work that I do was based on Debbie Ford's work that was based on Carl Jung, the psychologist's work. And it is that we all have these limiting beliefs or shadows, as Carl Jung called them, that were formed before the age of 10. And what happens is we forget about them, but they become these limiting beliefs that work in our subconscious brain and drive every decision. So if you have this belief that I cannot do that, or I can't be visible, you're going to go out there with this belief and it's going to stop you from actually being present enough to deliver your message. So a process that I tend to do with clients is when we take these limiting beliefs, we do trace back and figure out, when did you form this belief? What was happening? Who was around? We look at it so we can put adult eyes on it. Because what happened was you made a decision as a child who probably couldn't process what was happening around you. And that decision was buried in your subconscious and started to dictate everything. So by going back with adult eyes, and I'll give an example of this in a minute, but going back with adult eyes, we're able to see what was really happening and create a new belief that you can start to take action on. One of the key things about coaching is that it's not just about awareness. In order to create transformation, you must take action. So it is going back, creating a new belief, and then starting to take steps each day that will actually move you toward that belief, that will help your subconscious reprogram your brain so that it actually adopts this belief. I'm just going to give you my favorite and my longstanding belief of when I used to think I was stupid. I had a sister who, I was the cute one. She was the smart one. We tell the story together now so that I can actually tell it, but we both hated it. Right. So I remember being probably 8 years old or 7 years old, trying to show my parents a math problem. And they said, well, can't you get it? Here it is. And then my sister got it shortly after. So I decided at that moment I was stupid, particularly when it came to math. And so that belief drove me to do things like marry somebody who was smarter than I was, so that I could prove if he thought I was smart, then it was great. I went to law school, graduated with honors. I stayed in this job. So it perpetuates throughout time. In order to shift it and go back, I went to that instance when I was young. And what I got to look at with adult eyes was the fact that my parents were from the former Yugoslavia. They were taught math completely differently. They didn't understand the American math system. My sister is 4.5 years older than I am. Of course she was going to get that. So I could look at it with a little bit more honest eyes and see what to do with that information and realize that I was making a conclusion that probably wasn't correct. Now, when you create that new belief, my new belief isn't that I'm the most brilliant person in the world, because that's not going to work. Your subconscious brain is going to go, that's funny.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, we're not buying that. So it has to be something that really motivates, shifts you. So my belief has become, as long as I give myself enough time, I can do anything. And honestly, that shifted everything for me. I no longer have to be proving anything. I don't have to be doing some of those things that really drove my behaviors before. So this is the kind of exercise I do with clients to sort of excavate their limiting beliefs. And just so we get a taste of them, they sound like that. I'm stupid. I'm not enough. The world is not going to give me what I need. I fail every time. Anything that sounds like an absolute, like that really has sort of all of its roots in the past, is a limiting belief. So it's one of the ways that I say, going at full circle back to visibility, where did you learn that being visible was bad? You know, did a teacher sort of say something to you? For me, like, I wear black all the time. It was, as I said, my parents were from Yugoslavia. I had these red you know, salamander European shoes when I was a kid while everybody else is wearing Nike. I will not very often wear color as a result, right? You know, but it's that's how your visibility issues are formed. And so it's go back and look, create a belief that feels safe to you to start saying, okay, maybe it's as long as I, you know, take it one step at a time, or maybe if I'm, you know, if I prepare for an hour, I can do this. It just starts one little step at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. Love the story. And it's kind of, we have these experiences, and I guess particularly when we were children, because we were very impressionable, that we assign a meaning to that experience and then we carry that meaning forward. So we don't carry the experience forward, we carry the meaning forward, right?
Right, exactly.
Because I've got one very similar, and I remember when we unpacked this one with my business coach, I was like, oh, I'd totally forgotten this. So it was like I would have been 4 years old at the time, and it involved my dad, and he used to tinker a lot and work, and I used to have to either watch and keep him entertained or help, you know. And he was lying under the car one day, and he said, "Can you hand me a Phillips screwdriver?" Now, at 4 years old, I knew what a screwdriver was, but I didn't know that there were all these different types of screwdrivers. So I just grabbed a screwdriver out of the toolbox, handed it to him, and he got very angry, flew off the handle, said, "That's not a Phillips screwdriver, that's a flathead screwdriver. Don't you know what a Phillips screwdriver is?" And so, of course, you know, here I was, 4 year old. So I realized, hey, I'm pretty stupid, I'm not good enough here. Yeah. And when we started unpacking limiting beliefs, and this is, you know, years and years later, I mean, decades later, and I'd actually, whilst that memory is still there, it was completely out of my conscious mind until that moment. And I thought, oh my God. And so I'd assigned this meaning. And really, now looking at it as an adult, I say, well, he was just angry. He just lost his temper. Because, I mean, I've had situations like that where I've been tinkering with something and something didn't work out the way I thought. And I get very angry and frustrated. And that's what happened there. And he kind of lashed out. Didn't mean anything other than that. And yet I carried that limiting belief for so long.
Yeah, we are meaning-making machines. Right. Yeah. I mean, we're programmed to take in the world and see what's happening and, you know, put it into like those file cabinets in our brain. And your poor 4 year old brain couldn't put it into any file cabinet other than, well, that must mean something is wrong with me, you know, or I'm not good enough. And by the way, I had to tinker with my father the same way. He didn't have sons. So I probably have the same Phillips, you know, flathead screwdriver story somewhere in my memory too. So, yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about money. And,
money.
You know, you mentioned, I guess, pricing and sales. Let's do pricing first, because that's a big one, I think. You know, and I know I struggle with that. I have a service. I know people value the service. I know it does a lot in terms of transforming that person's business or life even. And yet when it comes to, well, they ask, how much does it cost? And I'm thinking, is that going to be too much? Or I don't think I can ask that much.
Right.
So, yeah. So how do you approach the mindset there that's going on?
Pricing's so tricky, but it's one of my favorite things to talk about with clients usually, because I typically find that most people price themselves low. It's just our nature. We don't want to seem greedy. We don't want to seem like we're selfish, that we're somehow money hungry, or whatever the stories we've heard around money are. So we set our pricing based upon how we want to be seen. And I think it's a big mistake people make, and it is, they start to compare, well, you know, Jane over here charges X and I don't have as much experience as Jane, so I have to charge less. So again, another belief. Or Joe over there is charging, what? How could he be charging that much, right? Or my clients can't afford me. So they can't afford this much. I mean, Jane over here can be charging that because her clients can afford that, but mine cannot. So see the narrative we start? So we go into this whole narrative that has nothing to do with the actual pricing, but really how we appear to the world or what our clients can or cannot do. So I often suggest a few things. Number one, if you are thinking about your clients, you are taking too much responsibility on for them. It is up to them to always say no or yes. And not every client is going to say yes. It is something that we all have to learn. If you are selling and actually have a closing rate of 80%, your pricing is too low. Like, you have to be rejected half of the time at least to know that your pricing is decent. So that's one thing I say is stop taking responsibility for other people. We recognize our own power to say no, right? But we don't recognize how other people have that power to say no and take control of their lives. So if you're doing that, it's a great way to be like, you know what? I don't actually have to worry about them. I'm going to price differently. And here's how I want, you know, people to consider pricing. Pricing must always be based on the value that you add to other people's lives. That's the truth. And it is something that we forget. Take yourself out of the equation. Again, this is another circumstance where I say take yourself out. Except, I do want people to think about how much time have you invested to learn the skill that you have? How much schooling have you invested in? How much have you put in energy in paying for the exact same thing that you're probably giving to others? What are you willing to pay? And it is vastly different from how people set their pricing. And that comes in with the value piece. How much value are you adding to people's lives? Really consider that. Like, it may be that because you have 10 years of experience in marketing or in, you know, positioning or whatever it is, that you can now charge based on your expertise. People think about it as very service-based. Well, here I am back on my hourly. Like, you are just killing yourself at that point. How much value am I adding? And really consider yourself as an expert. Price yourself from there. It will generally be higher. The other one thing I do to trick myself on pricing, especially like if you're doing a big proposal, this is, you know, for my marketing and my copy proposals, because coaching is really easy. It's one flat fee and I don't have to really worry about it. Yeah. And that is what it is. But for copy and marketing, I want you to think of it this way. Amy Posner, who is amazing in sort of the copy world, she taught me that to sit on your proposals for 24 hours, because your chances are that you're going to discount really quickly before you send it out the door. And really allow yourself to sit with a higher price for 24 hours because you get yourself comfortable. And in the morning you send it out. So I typically try to say, it's not necessarily 24 hours, maybe 12, maybe a few, whatever you need. But that trick helped me set my pricing just that bit higher. So, and usually it's been fun. So,
Yeah, I love the approach of kind of looking at, I mean, the key for me is always, you know, what value do you provide and is what's the return on investment? And I like to, you know, tell people, well, here's the investment you make in working with me on this, rather than this is the price it's going to cost you. So changing the language a little bit kind of helps me think about it differently as well. But then taking yourself out of the equation is a really good one. I have done the sit on a proposal for 24 hours. I've done proposals where I've looked at it and said, well, I'm just going to increase. So what I wrote down first, I'm going to increase that by 50%, then I'm going to park that and come back tomorrow and have a look at it. And then if I have a look at it and don't go, oh my God, I can't believe how high I've priced that, then I'll send it off like that. Yeah. So sometimes that works, but of course, you know, sometimes that gets rejected as well.
Yeah. And you do have to check your mindset as to when you're writing the proposal. I think particularly in the time of COVID, it's been really hard for people. I think people's inclination is to take clients outside of their scope right now, to really have that knee-jerk reaction to pricing and say, okay, I have to cut in order to get that. I had a proposal that went out on something, a small project I wanted to do. I was the highest person in the middle of COVID and I won. And so I think it's really, you have to be careful of your own mindset going in. And particularly with uncertainty, fear creeps in. and fear has a nasty way of saying, well, what if you're going to, and it's literally like, what if I don't get this contract? What if I don't, what if I price myself out? I'm going to not be able to pay for my house over my head. I'm not going to be able to eat next week. I mean, you go to these extremes in your thoughts, and fear has this natural way of trying to protect you. But what happens is you end up discounting yourself, particularly during these times. I've seen a lot of that.
Yeah, I see a lot of it too. And I kind of wonder, because, you know, you talked about comparing yourself to others and saying, well, I can't charge as much as this person because they have more experience or whatever. And also being worried about what your pricing says about you. So if you're really expensive, people might think, oh, he's not a really nice person.
Right.
But then on the other hand, if I pitch my service at a really low price, what does that say about me? I mean, it kind of says that I'm not worth much more than that.
Right.
That's an incredibly important point. And discounting to me, unless it's sort of in the right context, discounting to me is a similar message.
It's such an important point you make. I teach clients. So a lot of the times we'll even work on the strategy in their business, because mindset and strategy tend to go hand in hand for me. But we talk about discounting, and I say, you use that word, I am quitting on you, because discounting is, it's really a self-worth piece too. I mean, if you're discounting, we commoditize our services by saying we discount things. And I think it impacts mindset tremendously when you discount. And to your point about going too low, people don't value things they can get for cheap or for free. I'm a business instructor in a life coach institute that actually trains coaches now about business too, because that was so passionate for me. But what I teach them is that please do not give your services away for free. Please do not go under this price, because your clients will not value it. You will be miserable working with them within a week. We all know that. We've been there.
Yeah.
And so I think that point, and I'm grateful for you for bringing that up, because I think that's incredibly important.
At the same time, of course, I think it's important to meet everyone on their journey where they are. But having said that, it's like what you said earlier, you know, you'll attract a certain type of clients with a certain type of pricing. And if they're ones that you're not happy working with at that price, and you're driven to do a really good job, guess what? They're going to refer you to the same type of people. So you're just going to keep getting those sort of clients.
Well, and you're right about meeting people where they are in terms of pricing. One of the things that I got good at in terms of marketing copy strategy is I would create proposals that had options. You know, it's not about, so for example, it's not about, I think I had, I like doing sales and launch copy still. Somehow I find it fun in emails. And so someone wanted to hire me for the sales page and some emails, and I had a price and she had a different price, and I didn't try to fit into her price, but I cut some of the services. I just cut back, and we were both happy with the result, because I could still do it. If I thought it compromised the product, I wouldn't. But the idea is that you can meet them where they're at in that respect. And I think that's an important piece too in your pricing, is you can offer options. That's especially right now, that kind of flexibility people appreciate.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it comes back to your point earlier about the value that you bring. First of all, people, if you start discounting all of a sudden with nothing else changed, then people value it less. But if you say, here's the value I bring for this package, and if you're not in a position to afford that right now, we can provide a smaller part of that package. Obviously, there's a smaller part of the total value that I've outlined that you get.
Right.
But it might be more affordable for you right now, and it's a place to start. And we could build from there.
Yeah. It's a great way to think about pricing, because it often allows for you to show up as a trusting partner to your clients that way. So I do like that approach a lot.
All right. Now let's move on to sales then. I guess it's kind of related, because a key part of sales is setting the price, but getting out there and actually selling. And I know this is a favorite of mine. So what are some of the mindset things that are going on in our mind right now? I mean, the obvious one to me is somebody might say no, and I don't like rejection because I want to be liked.
I want to be liked too. I hate being rejected or failing, or, you know, we go to the place of my business will fail if I don't make this sale, right? Like, we're just, if we don't make the sale or someone doesn't like us, we're complete losers. I mean, it's a terrible feeling. And I think a lot of us mistake sales for that. I remember when I met my husband, he said I hadn't failed enough 10 years ago when I met him. He said, you haven't failed enough. I said, what does that mean? He said, you haven't taken the risk of putting yourself out there in this way. And I at first was furious at him, but I keep using that point so that every opportunity to have a sales conversation is an opportunity to fail and learn. And so for me, I used to hate sales so much. I mean, as a lawyer, it was like my least favorite thing to do. And they need you. So especially criminals, it's not a really hard sale. They're in jail. They kind of need you. But I really hated selling. And when I started to think about sales in both the marketing sphere and in both the mindset sphere, I started to think of it of how can I be of service? My friend Joel Kletke, who's also an amazing copywriter, he has a whole sales program that I like, where he said, think of what you can leave someone with on a sales call. You know, come fully prepared, honor the person on the call with whatever information you can get about them. Give them something that they walk away with, even if you are not the right fit. Give them somebody else to work with if you're not the right fit. And for me, from a mindset perspective, when you think of sales as being of service, every call becomes this excavation and this exploration. And how do I actually help you? It's not about convincing them that my pricing is worth it. It's convincing them that I'm the right person to solve their problem. And if I'm not, I'll know that too quickly and give them somebody else, right? And the idea for me is, in sales, we think of selling as, like, you know, when you walk into a car dealership, you just cringe. I don't want to be sold at. I don't want somebody to tell me I need something I don't. Selling is about listening. When you start to actually listen to people, you start to dive into their problems. You start to actually be creative and think, oh, that's so cool. Well, if we did this, we could do this. You know, on the mindset front, I'm like, oh, I hear this. Did you hear that piece? Right? Because most people can't hear. They come in thinking I have this problem, but maybe it's really this solution. And if you can actually think of sales as an opportunity to listen, to bring your most creative self, to bring some of what you do best to the forefront in your first few minutes, then it's never really about sales anyway. It's really about, wow, that person just understood me. Yeah. I mean, the truth is we want to go with the person who understands us and who can provide us with a solution. I have a mindset of sales course, and I talk about three things that essentially right now in particular are important when you think of sales. And this is what drives decision-making for your clients. And I also want, when you're doing sales, mindset's important. You must think of your clients, your prospective client's mindset. So there's three things they're considering. One, autonomy. Does this give me control over my life? Two, relatedness. Does this help myself, my family, or my community at large? Number three, competency. Am I competent in making this decision? Is this the right person? So really, that's what's going into every decision on a sales call. Are you giving them control of their life in some way? Are you actually making their life better and those around them better in some way? And are you giving them the confidence that you are the right person so that when they have made this decision 2 months from now, they said, that was the best money I just spent. So I think that's really how, if you approach sales from that perspective and understanding that that's what your clients or prospective clients are looking for, you come in with a curiosity. and you come in knowing, hey, these are the needs I need to meet for them. If I'm not meeting them, I'm not the right one.
Hmm.
It's a mutual conversation too. So
yeah,
again,
I love it. Love it. So a lot of listening, a lot of curiosity, and a service-based mindset. And yeah, having that service-based mindset means that, hey, if you've got a product or a service that's going to help this other person, you've got a responsibility to actually have that sales conversation, right?
Exactly. That's right. That's absolutely
and,
right.
Yeah, I had one this week that ended up in me saying, I'm not the right person for you, and connecting them with two other people who I thought would be a good fit for what they wanted. And that was a really good conversation. And it yeah, started off with me asking lots of questions and what specifically do you need? And it turned out that they had somebody that they were actually working with that was doing pretty much all the things that I was good at, and they were really happy with that person. So there was no sense in me trying to sell them, if you like, you know, take me on board, because I didn't know anything about this other person. All I knew was they were really happy with them. They just needed the missing bits that that person didn't offer, and I don't have those missing bits. So I
exactly
went back and said, well, here are the people that I think can help you, and I've worked with both of those people and they're really awesome. So I gave them recommendations that I would be comfortable working with, and they were really happy. Now,
that's win-win.
Yeah, that's early days yet. I don't know whether that'll lead to business with those people or whether those other people I referred her to can help her, but you know, at least it's moved on to the next step.
Yeah, it is.
Hmm.
So,
all right. I did want to explore the idea of, I mean, we talked about sales and the service. I wanted to explore the idea of the follow-up. So when you make a big sale in particular, what mindset do you need to bring there to the follow-up? Because a lot of the times I see things where I've purchased a program and then I'm all excited. And so, you know, obviously there's a sense of buyer's remorse that's probably directly proportional to how much money I've actually outlaid right then and there. But I'm usually very excited because I've made the decision. I've been in control of that decision. Excited to get started, or excited to start to see some results from the promise that this particular product or service has made. And then things are really quiet. Things go quiet for a period of time, and of course, in my mind, as the customer, I'm starting to develop new stories in my head that are ones that generate lots of doubt.
Right. So you just point out some of the things that I talk to course creators about is where do you have to be concerned about your mindset of your purchasers, so that they remain engaged the entire time. And one of them is right afterwards. What happens, unfortunately, in the launch field, right, is that we're concerned about the sale and then nothing. And then there's a gap sometimes between whatever the start date is, and then you get very little interaction in between. And so you've lost a little of that momentum and interest. So it's exactly what you described. So I think it's an interesting piece for people to tackle in terms of whether you're working one-on-one or whether you have a program. So one-on-one, it's important for all of us to have our onboarding process regardless, right? And I think that, you know, in the mindset space, I always get people scheduled immediately. I tell them a few things they can do to get started. It's usually less than a week because I won't take someone unless we can start right away because there's too much of a gap. But if there is, for example, a gap in time, you know, there are things you can send for people to work on to send back to you so that there's some engagement or feedback, right? You know, I have a product I'm launching this Thursday. It's a vision. It's called Unbound Your Vision. It's about getting true clarity. It's probably a pretty intense vision program. And one of the things that I did on my onboarding sequence purposely was say, please respond and share your worksheets with me. I will read them. And I do. I intentionally read them because I want people to know that I'm engaged, I'm interested in them. And so it is in that onboarding process. I just signed up for a course too that has, you know, week or monthly calls, has some implementation sprints. But it's evergreen. You go at your own pace. I mean, it's not evergreen. It's you go at your own pace. And one of the things that I loved that he did is I signed up and he said, let's get on a call immediately. He does his customer interviews at the beginning. And it got me engaged. So remember the mindset of people really with that third piece, they want to feel really good about that purchase. Let's not forget it, that after the sale, we still have work to make people really like us and feel good about us.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's an important piece, is to make sure that your welcome process is nailed down, because you are overcoming one mindset obstacle. Now, obstacles happen later on when people get, you know, frustrated with themselves, when they feel their resistance and all of that. But it's always in play. That's sort of why I said mindset first. It's always in play.
All right. Well, this is absolutely fascinating, Linda. I could talk mindset all day, and there's obviously a lot of different segments we could unpack there. But I am aware of the time, and I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And there's probably lots of questions there that can have mindset first answers. So I've got 5 questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers and inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
Awesome.
So first thing is, what do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Allow time for creative thinking. I really think that it's important that you even allot 10 minutes a day, which I even do. Sometimes 10 minutes is enough for me. And my creative thinking, actually, I use an online journal system where I have a prompt. I ask myself a question, whether it's business or personal, and I spend 10 minutes free writing. I have a sort of mind-body business approach to my life, where I read first thing in the morning, then I do my free writing, and then I go to the gym. And while I'm at the gym, I'm listening to podcasts and marinating on what I wrote. So for me, innovation really starts with giving yourself the opportunity to think beyond the shoulds, the have-tos, and the to-do list. And so for me, I treasure that free writing time. It's critical if you own a business and want to start to think of new ways to serve.
Yeah, I love that. I love the environment you put it, enclose it in as well, to have a routine around it where you kind of do the writing, but then you reflect on it later on and in the context of maybe a podcast that you listen to, where other things will trigger thoughts related to what you'd written previously.
That's great.
Okay. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I think I'm in that process right now. As I said, I sort of joined a program to really revamp some of my own offerings and really think about where I'm at. I think understanding my client at such a deep level of their problems has helped me think through and be more innovative, create new things. And it's good to get back to basics sometimes. I think we take for granted that we know who we serve and what their problems are. It's time to touch base with them from time to time. In your mind, in actual customer interviews, in actual, thinking about the environment we're all in and how it's changed. I think this whole COVID thing shook a lot of people up. And in fact, I've used it to say, how is selling different? How am I creating something that's different? How's all of this really impacting people? So I think that's the environment I put myself in to create something new.
Yeah, that's really great advice. And checking in with customers all the time to see, is my understanding of my ideal customer still relevant, or do I know enough? And as you say, with what's going on right now, is sort of drastic changes in the external environment that impacts all of us. How's that working for my clients?
Exactly.
All right. Do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
Trying to think for a favorite resource, God, other than my thesaurus.
As a copywriter,
right. Or even my own emails, I like to do that. But I think, on the copy resource, but always for my skills, I go back to Joanna Wiebe and Copy Hackers is wonderful training for writers. So I go back to that as a resource. For I think that's always, it's a good way to triple check, even in my own writing to my own list and to my own sales pages and to all my own marketing. It's just a good resource, and it's like a library of lessons always. So I go back to that quite a bit.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll have to check that out in some more detail.
Yeah.
Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
That's great. That's my job. I mean, I hold people on track. Accountability is a key part of what a coach does. So one of the things I think is, and just divide vision and goals. Making sure my client has a clear vision for their business or their life is something that we get to. It may not even actually be the first thing we do, but having a general thing, understanding of where they're going is important. And then we actually set up clear goals. And I think this is where people make a mistake, is they think they know what SMART goals are. They think it's great. And, you know, they've heard of them. But where people get really tripped up is that I really hone in on making sure every weekly task, because people have action steps that they have between the week that they talk to me, that the action step is so crystal clear that someone looking in would understand exactly when they're going, what they're going to do, when they're going to do it. Is it realistic, which is where people fail all the time? And is it achievable? Does it rely on someone else? Is it, do you need an act of God, right? So the two places people, the way I hold people accountable is I make them create these action steps that are so crystal clear and realistic. If I see something in a client that says, hey, you just decided your website's going to be done next week and you haven't even started it. I mean, that's an extreme example, right?
Yeah.
But
can
we break it down, right? Mm. And so accountability is, and I will say this, most people get a coach because they can't be accountable to themselves. Mm. So my job is to teach them how to value themselves enough to create disciplines and structure to be accountable to themselves. So if you can't be accountable to yourself, find someone, because it's someone who scares you a little bit. So the fastest way to stay accountable.
Hmm. Yeah. And public accountability is a really good one in that sense too. As I remember earlier this year, I like to do these long bike rides, but I was looking at this one that I'd done for years and years and years, and it was 100 kilometers. And I thought, well, 100 kilometers, that's fine. But they'd put on a new one, which was 100 miles, so 165 kilometers through hills. And they added, the extra bit that they added on was really serious hills. And I hadn't done much training, and I was kind of humming and hawing. I was committed to do the event itself because I love to do it, because it's a big fundraising thing for cancer research, and I love to support them, and it's always a fun event. But I thought I should challenge myself. I should do the big one. And then I kind of was humming and hawing because I knew I wasn't fit enough to do it. And one day I was having a conversation with somebody, and I just blurted it out. I said, I'm going to do this event. I'm going to ride 165 kilometers, whatever it was. And that was it. From that moment on, there was no question in my mind. I was going to do this. Now, I did the event. There's another story around that, because it was quite a challenge having actually not trained enough for it. I just thought, well, it's interesting. The mindset actually changed quite significantly the moment I made that kind of public announcement.
Yeah, it is. It's huge. I mean, if you can make a public commitment, that'll motivate you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, because then there's the story going on in my mind is, I don't want to look stupid, and people come back and say, well, you said you're going to do it and you didn't.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
All right. Now, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
You know, I think this is, you know, in the mindset space, it's so interesting. I faced that issue, right? How do I differentiate? And there's so many beliefs around coaches. And I think it's really understanding yourself and what you do best, you know. And I think it's really understanding and appreciating your skills and not being unafraid to share them. I mean, I am tenacious. I am direct. If I'm, you know, I joke that I'm practical woo. I love woo things, but I'm going to be really practical. If you're looking for something else, that's not me. And I think we think we have to differentiate ourselves by, you know, just being different from somebody else. It's, again, it's not about anybody else in that respect. This is where you get to put yourself back in the equation. This is about looking at yourself and your skills and getting past your stories about sharing them. We're told not to brag or boast or whatnot. To differentiate yourself, you got to dig and look at, what am I really good at? What am I better than others at? And so go there. And sometimes don't be afraid to combine odd things. You know, a lot of people don't think mindset and business strategy really go together, but for me, it's perfectly natural. And so I own that.
Yeah.
And so it actually makes me slightly different than others. Not because I was trying to be, but because I understood how I can serve.
So it comes back to how you can serve. But also, I think the self-awareness bit is really big there. And I mean, that sort of comes back a lot to mindset there. But if I read through your background, I mean, criminal lawyer and copywriter and now mindset coach, I mean, there's three kind of boxes or categories, if you like, there that not many people would have together in one space. And then there's lots of things I know in my own work that there are so many things that I just do without even thinking about them, that I totally take for granted. In fact, they're so deeply embedded in my unconscious that I'm not even aware that I do these things. And yet I'll have people watching me sometimes and I'll go, oh, wow, how did you do that? Oh, that's amazing. You know, and I say, what? You know, so we often have these things that are of huge value to other people and we're not even aware ourselves that we know that we have that skill, that we know how to do it, and that they're of huge value to somebody else because not everyone knows how to do that.
Yeah. And you have to look for the connections. I mean, you do have to look for, what is it that I've done in my past and how does it connect to what I'm doing now, to really share about what makes me unique. For example, I mean, you know, the fact that I was a lawyer sometimes gives me credibility, but the fact is all three are tied because I like to give people their voice. When they cannot. And that includes coaching. I give them back their opportunity to find their own voice, their confident voice, the whatever. So all three, that's what I have done. And so if you find that helps you sort of go, oh, that's what makes me different.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to look.
And also that gives you, I mean, those connecting the dots exercises, I think, are really powerful. And it gives you kind of a sense of, so that's what drives me.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. And also then, what else is there? How else can I do that for people?
Yep.
All right. Well, this has been fabulous, Linda. Now, where can people reach out and find out more about you and maybe even get in touch to say thank you for what you've shared today?
My website is lindamperry.com. You can find me there and connect with me. I also have a free guide that I give away, lindamperry.com/the-guide. It's a guide to how to put mindset first into your own life. So those are kind of the ways. I'm on Instagram at linda.m.perry. I'm always on LinkedIn. You can find me, Linda Perry, on LinkedIn. Those are my two favorite platforms, and I am pretty active on both. So please reach out. You know, have any questions, I answer them. You know, feel free.
All right. Well, thanks, Linda, and we'll post links to those in the show notes so people can click straight through and they can check out the guide as well.
Yep, wonderful.
All right, now, do you have some parting advice for our listener today?
You know, don't try to do everything all at once. Mindset is really about, you know, I like what he says in Atomic Habits, the book. It's really about being 1% better today. That's it. That's really all that it takes. It's a lifelong process and it can be really fun.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of James Clear.
Me too.
Yeah. All right. Now, finally, who would you like me to chat with on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
You know, I was thinking, if you've not heard of Ross O'Loughlin, he's got a system called conversion engineering. And I really like, he is sort of anti-launch and he's really gets you back to understanding your offer, the conversion aspect and the traffic aspect of your business, and how do you really connect with your audience. And I enrolled in Ross's program off of one email, and I think, you know, it's that whole thing. It's the best money I have spent in terms of understanding and reconnecting to my business. So he's brilliant. He's an Irishman. He's just so much fun too. So I really enjoy the intensity with which he comes to his business and helps people get out there.
All right. Well, we'll reach out to Ross and maybe get an introduction from you and have a conversation with him. Sounds like a fascinating topic to dig deeper into.
Yeah, he's great.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and insights with us so generously today, Linda. This has been fun. Bit of a mindset shift, I hope, for everyone, including me.
So too.
I've really enjoyed it. So all the best for the future and let's stay in touch.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that engaging and insightful conversation with Linda and took something away from what she shared with us today. Linda's focus on service and transformation and making a difference by changing your own mindset first were the highlights for me. I'd love to know what you took away from Linda's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Linda M. Perry. That is LINDAMPERRY. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Linda M. Perry. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Linda there, as well as links to her website, her Mindset First framework, her social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Linda suggested that we have a conversation with conversion engineer Ross O'Loughlin on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So Ross, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast courtesy of Linda M. Perry. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast where we've got even more fantastic guests lined up, including founder of the Australian organic food company, Adrian Sesta, and behavioural economist, John Howe. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.